Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great week for It's the Real.
How do we always have all these great weeks?
Well, you know what? We had a great week last week, especially because we had Mary H.K. Choi on the podcast, and she's somebody who we've known for a while, but it was nice to introduce her to a lot of our audience, and a lot of people really took to her.
Yeah.
Her stories about Texas, her stories about interviewing Rihanna. People really got a lot from Mary out there, and hopefully she'll come back soon. Now, that was the good part of the week. You also talked about how it might not have been the perfect week.
I had a shitty haircut.
Which ruined not just one day, but every day since then.
Yeah, it's still a shitty haircut.
It is not fully grown back yet. Your hair might grow fast, but not today. We went to a listening party for Post Malone at Up and Down. It was just beyond hot in there, so we had to leave at a certain point because...
Well, it's like, if you're going to have a listening party, like, turn on the air.
It was honestly like a sauna in there. It was crazy.
And not even like a dope sauna. Just like sauna with clothes on.
It was a bad sauna. Nice to see everyone down there. It was a nice gathering, but we had to go.
Because it was too fucking hot.
So we got out on the street where it was less hot. Right. And who do we run into?
Ran into Brittany Sky, who people might remember from our podcast with her.
She was also in our music video for Jews for Jesus piece. She was also in Kendrick Lamar's music video for Poetic Justice. So we run into her and a friend.
Yeah, and her friend cuts hair.
For a living?
Yeah.
He doesn't just like walk down the street and cut hair.
No, and I was just like, yo, I just got the worst haircut. Like, I'm really bummed about it. And he looks in my hair and he goes, there's pills for that.
And so, I said, wait, hold on. He was talking about...
He thought I needed Rogaine.
He thought your hair was so...
He thought my hair was so bad I needed Rogaine. And I'm just like, yo, my man, my hairline is fine. You're being a dick.
Well, what kind of hair does he cut?
He cuts women's hair.
Oh, see? He doesn't know.
It's not that big of a difference. Like, you can look at somebody and be like, hey, you want to know what?
Hold on. Were you wearing a hat?
No.
You were not wearing a hat.
No.
You braved going out in the world with your shitty haircut, let the people see what you looked like. Who
I might have been wearing a hat.
Who'd you say you look like?
I look like Dimitri going to a club like in Russia.
They cut your hair. I looked like
I was ready to, you know, buy some blue jeans on the corner of a Ukrainian plaza for like $1,000.
You looked so ready to get back into communism.
I looked like a cable network could be filmed in our apartment.
Funny thing about that. Anyway, so now this guy says you need Rogaine. How you feeling?
Like a shithead.
Is it too late to go over across the street to this haircut / place where you can buy gold behind the counter?
Right. Well, people might not understand that, because I still don't understand that. You can go into my barbershop and you can buy gold, like necklaces, chains.
You can trade
rings.
Gold.
Yeah. You can trade gold.
In addition to getting your haircut.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
you know, before or after.
It's expensive to have a storefront in New York City.
So just, you know, sell whatever.
No, at what point do you go over there and can you demand your money back a week since your haircut?
No.
Why not?
They did screw it up,
and
but like
the customer's always right.
Oh, well.
If they say no,
I wonder if they abide by that.
If they say no, you say da.
Nice.
Today on the podcast, we went to see our friend Mike Posner at his hotel. He had just finished with Seth Meyers. He was in town for that, and we had an amazing conversation. People are going to remember Mike Posner from his mixtapes back in 2009, 2010, A Matter of Time, One Foot Out the Door.
Yeah, he had a song called Cooler Than Me that people might know.
Yeah, with Big Sean. It was a huge hit. His journey is incredible. He was on RCA. He got shelved. He had to find himself again.
And now he has a huge song. You might know it. It's called I Took a Pill in Ibiza. I mean, it's everywhere. You'll hear it in like Dwayne Reed at like 3 o'clock in the morning or at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, it's everywhere.
And it's off his new album called At Night Alone.
Yeah, go buy that now.
It's available through Island Records. Shout out to them. We also got a visit from our friend Kaz and our friend Ben over from The Stashed. And they just put out a new physical... It's more than a magazine because there's no ads in there.
It's a lifestyle.
It's like a coffee table book. It's a heavy, beautifully put together book. they feature Wiz Khalifa and Casey Veggies and Lion Babe and Pete Davidson, who you know from SNL. It's a great piece of work, and they came by to talk about it, and let's get into that now.
The funny thing is, the way it started is, you know, Stash is ran by translation, and literally it started with Stout texting me at like 2 in the morning, like the day after Christmas. It's like, yo, I want to put out a dope-ass print magazine. And I was like, all right. The day after Christmas. I'll never forget. I still have the email. And he was like, yo, I want to put out a dope-ass print piece or whatever. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. So, like, when Steve gives you, like, the direct call, there's not really much negotiation. Just like, all right, so I guess we're doing a magazine. You know, so.
It was almost like he hit you over the head with a champagne bottle.
Oh, see? I'm not going there.
We were there for the Stashed. Was it the 2-year anniversary?
Yep. Yes.
And you guys announced that you were going to be doing this.
Yes.
Like, showed us the cover and everything. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Big party, well attended, mm-hmm. a lot of fun. That was a year ago, yes. What have you done over the course of this year to bring it literally to our apartments?
Well, you can see in the, once you pick it up and hold it, it's not like a typical like magazine.
No, it's heavy, like
a,
by the way.
It's heavy. It's like a coffee table.
It is. It really is. It's like bigger than, it's just about like Rolling Stone size. Yeah. Like it is, it's a real thing.
It was a lot of work. And on top of that, when we first announced it, we wanted to keep it like really in-house. And we didn't really want to reach out to a lot of people. And we wanted to make sure it was perfect the first time out, because we only, you know, I assume some people know what I've done in the past, but you know, we have to make a good first impression. So
we're not looking to compete with anyone. This is more of an extension of our brand and who we are. And this is something else that we can say, we brought this to the table. Enjoy.
Wiz Khalifa, you have Pete Davidson, you have Lion Babe, Casey Veggies, Ryan Hemsworth, and a bunch of others. What is most personal to you guys?
To me, personally, I guess the Wiz story, because, you know, back in my Source days, like, he was a guy where nobody was really checking for him in the magazine because we were all too busy going after the Dr. Dre's and the Ludacris's and the Jay-Z's and all this other stuff. So, like, I remember having to fight to get that coverage for him, you know what I'm saying, when Kush & Orange Juice was just about to drop and before even Black and Yellow and, like, before he really blew up. And there's a personal story in there about, we were doing a group photo shoot with a bunch of like up and coming artists. It was like Teyana Taylor, Young Chris, Currency, Pac Div, all these other guys. And Mickey Fax drops out. You know what I'm saying? At the last minute. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, he dropped out?
He drops out of the photo shoot because
wise decision.
Well, here's the thing. The theme of the photo shoot was like native tongues, right? And you know, back in the day, you know, Mickey Fax was all about, you know, NERD and like, oh, it doesn't really fit my feng shui type of stuff. So like he drops out at like the 23rd hour. So we're just like, God, who are we gonna get to replace this guy? And this is the first time, my first time meeting Wiz. One of the interns comes to me, he's like, yo, I know this guy, you know, Artie Pitt, he manages the guy Wiz Khalifa, and you know, we call him up and see if he'll do it, whatever. So we call him, we tell him the whole premise. He fucking, him, Artie, Will, I think Mac at the time, Benji, all load up a van from Pittsburgh, haul ass down to the financial district to the Source shoot just to make it in time for the shoot.
By the way, that's the entire rostrum company.
Exactly.
Everybody in a van.
That tells you how long ago this was. Like, they all were in the van and just hauled ass over there. So like, it was kind of like a nice full circle moment, you know, in the making of that. And you could log online and get the digital version where we got the video of us talking about that and just talking about how far we've come in such a long time. And it was really, obviously, launching a print issue is really hard in 2016, but it's even harder convincing somebody of that stature to be like, hey, you want to be on the cover of this magazine that nobody's really heard of before? Be the first one. And he was the guy who was like, yeah, screw it, I'll do it. Like,
that's dope.
Yeah, so we're just really trying to expand ourselves and make, you know, just bring a different type of scope to media, especially in this day and age where it's really hard to, you know, you can get your stuff from anywhere. You get your stuff from Twitter or Facebook or Snapchat.
Or itsthereal.com.
That's right.
Itsthereal.com.
So, like, you know, putting this this book together for a year, is there anything that was, you know, timely to that moment? And then it's just like, oh, the lead time of a magazine doesn't really, it's not conducive to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we factored that into it when we were making it. We wanted to, we didn't want to make it so much of a hey, Wiz Khalifa has an album out. Let's talk about Wiz Khalifa's album.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was more so like personal stories with people. It's more, you know, getting to know them as artists, getting to know, like, especially if the...
Oh, but why bother?
But why bother? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares about these guys? Yeah. But I mean...
I like to think of my artists as, you know, just entities that you can just throw away after their album comes out.
They just kind of live in my iPhone. And yeah, like, exactly. When I turn them off, they don't exist anymore.
You guys are both online guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like, big personas online. A lot of your business is online. How much of this gives you credit when you go home for, like, you know, holidays? You're like, oh, here, I can tangibly show you. Yeah.
My mom's going to be able to hold this. My grandma's going to be able to hold it. Before, they're like, what exactly do you do? Like, you write about things, but what does that mean? So I can bring this home, and they're going to be able to hold it, and I'm like, this is what we're doing, you know? And
are either of your moms on Snapchat?
Oh, hell no. My mom's on Snapchat. No. Oh, Snapchat is my escape from my mom. Like, I know she has a Facebook. She stalks my Twitter. She can see my Instagram, but Snapchat, I knew she has no way to use.
Did she listen to your Tax Stone interview?
No. Oh god. She actually did.
Did you? Oh, what?
Oh no.
It was awful. I got scolded by my mom about that. She's
I'm
like,
sure.
She's like, why are you on the internet talking all these sexual things about? I'm like, mom, it's I was like, oh gosh, can we stop talking about this?
Meanwhile, so, we ask you to be on our podcast.
All right, let's talk about it. Yeah. It's fine.
So you were not, I don't want to do the whole story. All right, now,
we don't have, yeah, but we invited you up here for the open mic episode, which was like asking a whole bunch of our friends to come up, tell their best like story.
Yes.
And you came up here.
And I came up here and I told a story that
you
I probably,
were so ready.
I was really excited and I told the story in full graphic detail. And it wasn't until I hit the stairs after this and I was like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Actually, you promised to punch me because I called you James Harden recently.
This is true. I didn't. I don't know if it was a punch. I think
fade on sight.
Yeah. So punches, kicks, headbutts.
So you get James Harden a lot. Jeff, you get Jeff Goldblum. Right. Like, more like the guy from Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, it's any Jew.
Right.
Yeah, any Jew.
I sat down with Lior. We had a meeting with Lior Cohen, and he said that I look like Harpo Marx, which is just crazy because
Harpo is blonde. And also because Harpo doesn't talk.
He's a mute, yeah.
Yeah, oh, wow. And so, like, you know, imagine for an hour and a half, all Lior hears Eric doing is, yeah, like that.
But do you get mistaken for anyone, Ben?
I've gotten called every white guy.
Yes. Every white guy?
Tobey Maguire, Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Fraud.
Aaron Rodgers
is
a lot.
Pretty good.
Aaron
Rodgers
is pretty good. I see a lot of that. I interviewed Olivia Munn, and I was like, this close to asking her opinion on it, and then I just checked it out. There's no way I was going to do it.
Oh, do you remember that he had, or maybe the Packers did it? Somehow they got like a real like exact lookalike to go in there.
For State
wore
Farm.
Their jersey. That's right. Yes, yeah. Shout out to Translation.
Shout out to Translation. We didn't do that ad, but shout out to them anyway.
Here's someone you can't duplicate. I think it's your most recent hire at The Stashed.
Oh, yeah. Lisa Ann.
Lisa Ann, the porn star.
Yes. Former adult film star.
Okay.
Lisa
yes.
Ann. Lisa is so, like, geeked to, like, work for us.
Yeah.
Like, it throws me for a loop sometimes, like, how, like, excited she's, like, handing pieces and, like, come to the office and just hang out and just, like.
Completely down.
Yeah. Like, she's the most down-to-earth person, like, I've ever worked with, ever met.
Sorry, Ben. Yeah.
No offense to you guys. No offense to you guys. But I mean, like, and the thing is, like, that really humbles us is that, like, she could have went anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally, when we went to, when we were, like, talking about, like, bringing her on full time, whatever, she's like, yeah, you know, after the Complex piece I posted, you know, they wanted to, you know, do some more stuff with me, but I told them no because I'm really committed to you guys. And, like, when I do something, I'm all in on it. So I'm 100% down with you guys. So I was just like, wow.
Would you say that she's the Dwight Howard to your James Harden?
Wow. I hope she's the Shaq to my Kobe. the Russell Westbrook to my Kevin Durant. Something a little bit more conducive.
You just don't like the analogy.
I don't, man. Like, you know what it is? My entire life, I never had hair. Like, I always just had, like, shortcuts.
Yeah, I saw in MySpace.
No beard. Yeah. We've all seen the MySpace thing. So, like, the first time I cut my hair, like, my hair doesn't really grow, like, in a full fro. So, I was like, you know what? Let me just run with this mohawk for a little bit. See how that goes. And then, like, you know, I went from getting all, like, the Virgil... The you look like Virgil Abloh stuff.
Yep.
To now, like, the James Harden stuff was, like, 20 times worse. Because... I went to Toronto for All-Star Weekend, and I can tell you how many times kids were running up to me with pens and pads, like, Mr. Harden. I'm like, yo, I'm not him.
Mr. Harden's my father.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Also, Mr. Harden is a person who worked with Lisa Ann in the past.
So this is volume one.
Which
means you guys promise there's a next issue, right?
Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely.
Do you promise that it's going to be less than 365 days from now?
I promise you that. Okay. Definitely be that.
So also, at the Stashed anniversary party when you announced that this was going to be coming out, we gave our home addresses.
Yes, you did.
Because we were expecting... So, are you going to do this to everyone now that you have all those addresses?
Well, the thing was, we were supposed to mail these out, right? The whole plan was we were going to put these together and then, you know, just mail them and it'll be a nice surprise when you guys come open to them, whatever. I thought it would just be a better idea just to kind of do, like, hand-to-hand deliveries.
No, totally get that.
Like, hey, you know, it's our first issue. Trust me, the next issue will just be mailed to you. I'm not doing this again.
I just want to know if Lisa Ann's going to come over and hand deliver issue number two, guys.
You know what? She's so down, she probably would. She probably would.
Yeah. Can you tell us what you guys are working on for issue two?
I cannot.
Okay.
But I can tell you it's going to be, you know, we're not going to go any lower in quality. Like, the reason why we wanted to put this type of print issue out is so I believe that if you give people quality, people will pay for quality.
Totally.
So, you know, it's the price point's at $20 an issue. The digital issue is $5 on the website.
Which is?
print.thestash.com. Yeah, man. Like, we want to make sure we take our time with it, not a full year. But, you know, this is going to be a quarterly. So every season, there'll be a new issue out.
Dope.
And we're going to make sure that people care about print again.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Before we get into this episode with Mike Posner, please go find us at soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also find us on iTunes. If you search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real, we will probably come up. We're also on Twitter. We're on Snapchat. We're on Instagram.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We're also on Google Play.
Yeah, which is...
So anybody with an Android or you don't like iTunes for whatever reason, go to Google Play and search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
Yeah, if your Snapchat is looking real fuzzy because of your Android, that probably means that you can go to Google Play.
Yo, a quick shout out to our friend Boss Nod, who is like, he's the champion of struggle phones.
Yo, it's like, that looks like a real Russian
phone. That is a Russian phone.
Yeah.
All right, when do you want to get into this episode with Mike Posner?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. The Crossing Guard, a.k.a. Streets is Watching.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Six Rings, a.k.a. Voicemail Full.
Yo, it's Mike Posner.
Yeah, and this is A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
You guys are amazing.
Yo, Mike, what's good?
I feel great.
Welcome to New York.
Can we tell them where we're at?
We're at your hotel. I mean, do you want to tell them specifically where you're at? Like, you're not going to be here by the time it's yours.
I'm laying in the bed.
Well, on the bed. I think your prepositions are wrong.
Yeah. You're right. I'm on the bed.
Yeah.
And we are just here.
Later, I'll be in the bed.
Yes, this is true.
But I'm over the covers.
See,
now.
you have great foresight, you know? So wait, you're here
I'm
in New York.
I'm trying to attract that into my life.
You're here in New York because you're doing Seth Meyers.
I did it.
I know, but it's airing tonight. Again, foresight.
Right. How was it? And it was great, man.
So you performed or did you do couch or?
I just performed. I'm not famous enough to get on that couch.
Really?
But I like singing more than speaking.
You're famous enough to be on the bed.
I'm famous enough to be on the bed. And for some girls, I'm famous enough to be in the bed.
Wow.
Yeah. Womp, womp, womp.
So you performed what tonight? The song that's big?
I performed I Took a Pill in Ibiza.
How did it compare to doing The Tonight Show?
It was great. You know, I was with my band tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight Show's at The Roots. And
sure.
The Roots, you know, I told them when I was there, they were my first concert. My big sister took me to see the OK Player Tour I'm from Detroit, but it was in Maine because she went to college in Maine. And I was visiting her, and I was maybe 11 or 12. OK Player Tour was Slum Village, Talib Kweli, Dead Prez.
Man.
Wow.
And The Roots were the headliner. And I played with The Roots a couple times before, but I was always trying to be cool.
Yeah.
And I never told them that. And, you know, before I got to just tell Amir that, And, you know, and he told me I really like this song.
That's amazing.
And so that is just like, you know, it's, that's like a dream come true. And I also, I really watch Jimmy Fallon. I like Jimmy Fallon. Yeah. So playing on that show is like really cool.
So what did Tuba Gooding Jr. have to say about?
I don't think I talked to him. He didn't play during with me.
No. But you did, I suppose you like said hi to all the Roots one by one at some point?
No.
Really?
Just the ones that played with me.
Okay.
And then I didn't see all of them.
But you want to know what? Next time, you tell them all.
You know,
how much
and
you
Rozelle wasn't there.
Well, right. I mean, look.
You gave up on the Roots. In
me trying to sound cool because I know stuff about hip hop.
Yeah, the real Roots ended in like, you know, 1999 for you.
Yeah.
So wait, what's it like backstage? By the way, when you're in the green room, are you actually watching the rest of the show?
I don't, because I sort of get like, it makes me nervous kind of to watch the thing. So I'm notorious amongst my friends for being a bit of a hermit. I don't go out a lot.
It's in real life.
In real life.
Yeah.
And so I use, when I do fun stuff like this, I invite all my friends. So I had a guy there from high school I hadn't seen in 10 years, kids from that I went to college with, and people from my record label. There. So it's a big party for me. I roll deep to these things. I did Ellen, too, a couple weeks ago, and it was like, it was me, Ice Cube, and John Cena.
Whoa.
And I didn't see it, but my friends were like, yeah, John Cena was just in his room, like, the door was open. He was alone. And it was like, we literally had, like, 30 people, you know, backstage. We're jamming. I'm playing guitar with my band, and sometimes we write new songs backstage.
That's dope.
What I don't do is just sit around and think about, like, playing Seth Meyers. I just have to
do it. That's what John Cena does. John Cena just sits there quietly imagining what it's like to play for Seth Meyers.
Yo, let's take it back to the very beginning. So you're born and bred just outside of Detroit or in Detroit?
Born in Detroit, bred, because after I moved out to the suburbs when I was 2.
Okay,
and
is
I grew up there.
Just you and your sister, or you have any other siblings?
She's the only sibling, and 2-parent household.
Gotcha.
Yeah, my parents still married to this day. 30-some years.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What did they do for a living?
My father was a criminal defense attorney. He's retired now. So Detroit was a good city for that profession.
Yeah.
and my mother was a pharmacist, but she's recently stopped, and she was going back to school to get her master's in historical preservation.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's smart really lady. Awesome.
She's a special lady.
What's the age difference between you and your sister?
6.5 years.
So,
which is why I had to go do cool things when I was young, like have her take me to see the Roots.
Well, okay, know? So she was into hip-hop?
She was. Originally, she was into grunge. So when I was in kindergarten and first grade, I remember her putting Nirvana in the headphones on my head, like being in the car, and my mom turning around going, get that off his head, and she would take it off. So I was listening like Pearl Jam and Silverchair and stuff like that. And then when she went to college, I got more into hip hop, and initially it was the guys on the TV at the time. So it was like DMX, Mystical. Did I do that? It ain't my fault. Did I do that? And then I think it was her, I'm not exactly sure, that got me onto the more conscious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she bought me this book by Bobby Seale, who was like one of the founding members of the Black Panther Party. And I read this book, and I got really fascinated with people whose politics kind of aligned with that. So we were like, I loved Dead Prez. Like, that was probably
you were so woke from a young age.
Yeah, it was crazy, you know? You know, I had all these, like, I thought I like knew how the world worked, and, you know, at age 13.
No, but like, because your sister put the headphones on you, like, you were ready to challenge the system, like, from a young age. You were just like, yeah.
You in that sentence, like, challenge the system, or like the system, right? Mm-hmm. In quotes, was like something that was part of my language. Yeah, probably starting age like 11, 12, like it is years now, you know? And so, yeah, and then I started getting to like Dead Prez. I loved Outkast. I loved Guy in the J Dilla, like at the end of high school.
Yeah.
Obviously Eminem.
So all this stuff was on the radio too?
No, that stuff was on there. Like Mos Def and Quali was on
the
radio.
Wait, was Eminem on the radio?
Eminem was on the radio once or twice.
No, I mean, like, that's like, yeah.
Once or twice. In Detroit, you know, they played them here and there.
Right.
So. Just sprinkling it throughout.
Yeah. That's right. So did you have the same group of friends going from like elementary school all the way through high school?
No. And that was kind of the beginning of the story that I left out. Was I'm Jewish, and I had like a couple Jewish friends that were like my best friends from age like preschool age to third grade.
Okay.
And then there was this like school that like started that was like a little bit better than ours. It was also a public school, and all my friends went to this other school. And my parents, I don't know why, they just left me in the one I was in, which was also really good, by the way. And like public school, but like good public school. And then after they left, I became friends with these two kids, Justin Dick. I know you probably have some joke coming up.
Well, no,
up.
Listen, we have a friend named Josh Dick, yeah. Right? And he used to do
tour agent stuff for like all these like different rappers. So like
including ASAP Mob.
And all the ASAP guys refused to call him Josh Dick. They would call him Josh Richards.
Yeah.
Because
they just didn't have it in them, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so my friends left. I hang out with Justin Dick and Aaron Webster. He's, you know, two black kids. They happen to be black, but they listen to DMX and Mystical. Yeah. So that was how the journey started. That was the prequel to my story that no one cares about.
By the way, were you bar mitzvahed?
I was, but I was part of this like semi-socialist like Jewish organization growing up, which like was secular, so we never talked about God. We learned Yiddish,
okay,
and we learned about like the history of the Jewish people, but we never talked about it. I didn't read from the Bible.
Uh-huh.
My bar mitzvah was like this, like like 20 page speech about the Jews' role in the civil rights movement.
Whoa!
In particular, like I forgot their names. I was like Michael Chaney. It was another guy named Goodman. It was these three guys. They went down south to do this protest.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and they all got killed.
Yeah. Our mom talks about them like all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. By like, the way, I just want to...
The Freedom Riders.
Yeah.
This was like, that was my bar mitzvah, was just about that.
Crazy.
Congratulations on becoming a man.
I know. Thanks. You know, if I feel like a man.
If anybody's just tuning in, this is our interview with Macklemore.
Wait. So did you have a party after your bar mitzvah?
Yeah, immediately.
And what was that's what I did too. Did you have yours right after?
The really rich kids split them up.
Oh yeah, but not us.
No. Yeah.
So wait, what was your theme?
I didn't really have a theme.
It was just show up.
I know
up
it's
and,
embarrassing.
And dance.
It was just like okay, no, I did my thing, and I just went into the next room, and like we had a DJ.
No, that's tight. Like embarrassing is like my theme was newspapers.
Newspapers.
Like, yeah, all like relatives from like Florida, like cousins. Sat at like the Palm Beach, you know, Gazette or something like that, or the Miami New, you know.
Well, you were also bar mitzvahed.
That's an awful theme.
Listen, and my brothers,
magazines,
yeah.
Magazines.
Yeah. Well, listen, again, we didn't have foresight. We weren't like in 2016. None of this stuff will even exist anymore.
Print is the future.
Print is the future. Oh
man. Yeah. So you're in middle school. You love hip hop. What were you in band?
I was in band. Yeah, I played drums. That was my first instrument.
Nice. Did your parents like give you a fight about that? Were they like, it'd be nicer if you played clarinet?
They wanted me to play piano, and I never wanted to do it. I thought it was girly, and I regret it now. Because I started taking piano as an adult. And
by the way,
I
agree
really
with them. Piano is like super girly.
Yeah. And so I wanted to play drums, but they were really supportive. They bought me a drum set.
That's dope.
They had it like in the living room at first. Terrible mistake.
Yeah.
And there was this old lady across the street named Rose Brooks, and she was like, "Did you hear the thunder? There was no rain, but it was thundering." Did you guys, you know? They moved into the basement shortly after
that. Did you have a band at that point, like your own band?
I didn't have my own band. There was a couple guys I used to jam with here and there. And when I got to high school, I played snare in the marching band.
Oh man, you are.
And the band teacher and I were at odds, and so by then I was starting to make beats and stuff. And
were you guys at odds?
He was just kind of a dick, and I think a lot of my teachers, because I did well in school,
mm-hmm.
I got good grades, and I was good. I was really good at the drums, but I was like, you know, I would dick around, and people didn't like. I think. No one likes the, your dicking around in their class, but then they get more mad if you're dicking around and like doing well on the test.
Right.
And that's what I was doing. And so he told me, quote, and I have a poem about this. He said one day he was, I think we were on like a band trip. I think he was, you know, had a couple drinks in. He looks at me and goes, "You really think you're something, huh? You ain't shit." You
oh, my know? God.
And I quit. I was like, fuck it, man.
It's like a Twisted Sister video.
Yeah. He was like, I was just like, all right,
what are you going to do with your life?
You know? And so I quit. You know, I was like, I'm just going to focus on doing beats and stuff.
Man, yeah. What grade was this?
That was sophomore year.
I love teachers who don't encourage their kids.
I did sophomore year and then junior year. I did not continue.
Was it a cool like band trip at least? Did you go to a cool place?
We went to Washington, D.C.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, just like down the street or anything.
No. Oh.
So, okay. You lived in Michigan.
Southfield.
There's lots of colleges out there, including like, you know, you want like you did really well in high school.
Mm.
And obviously, like, Duke is, like, a legendary, you know, very, very esteemed school. Why didn't you go to University of Michigan?
I applied to...
Or were you an MSU guy?
No, I wasn't. It was MSU is probably the school that it contains the most fun in its experience. Yeah, I've been to a lot of schools, you know, because my career started when I was in college. But... MSU's fun. I didn't apply there. I applied to Michigan. I got in. And I'm not proud to say this, but part of me just wanted to, like, beat everyone, you know? And most of the kids from my high school went to U of M, Michigan, or Oakland, or OCC. And I wanted to beat them.
Well, if you wanted to beat them, shouldn't you have gone to Ohio State?
Oh, yeah. My God.
The Ohio State University?
Yeah, beat them in football. I don't know how to beat them in, you know. I got love for Ohio State. You know, they support me. That's the weird thing. It's like, because I play all these schools, like UNC. You know, I played while I was still a Duke student, and the show sold out, which blew my mind. I thought they would boycott me.
Sure.
And so, you know, kids are like, oh, I'm a, you know, fuck Duke. And I'm like, listen, I love UNC. You know, I love UNC. I love State. And I'm not proud of that rationale. It's not a good reason to do something to beat someone else, you know. You should really be, like, following your gut and your heart. And I think, you know, these sort of inner guidances are a better, you know, way to sift through this crazy thing called life. But that I wasn't at that spot yet at 18, you know. I wanted to be, and I had someone really special in my life to help me finance that very egotistical drive, you know, because going to Duke is not a cheap endeavor. So that person didn't want to be named, okay. But they just, you know,
shout out to them.
Shout out to them. Huge shout out to
Rosa
out to
across
them.
The street.
Yeah, Rose Brooks, baby. What up, doe?
So, you know, it's funny. Your sister goes away, you know, 6.5 years before you do. So your parents already got that out of the way. So it wasn't even anything for you to go all the way down to North Carolina, huh?
No, we, you know, I was kind of a shithead. You know, I really was when I was like 18.
What would you do?
I was just super disrespectful to my mom and my dad, the way I would talk to them, you know.
But like, what were your SAT scores, you know?
I took the ACTs. And I took them the first time, I got 28. And I took them again, I got 29. And I just had this feeling like I can do better. So I kept taking it, I got 31. And then the last one, I got 33.
Okay, I don't know what ACT scores mean. Like, I was an SAT guy.
It's out of 36.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. But same idea, like, you're doing...
I remember there being math for sure, reading for sure. I think it's all multiple choice.
If you have any controversial views on the ACT and SAT, please leave a comment.
Yeah. Shout outs to the ACTs.
So you took them and you were just like, oh, and you got into Duke. And did you get into anywhere else that you really seriously considered?
Duke was my first choice. So I also applied to Northwestern. I also applied to Emory. And I applied to University of North Carolina. And when I got into Duke, I knew I was going there. So I had heard back from Michigan already. I hadn't heard back from Emory, Northwestern, or UNC. So I don't remember if I emailed or wrote a letter at that point. But I contacted them and said, hey, I'm not coming. So don't accept me because I want to take someone else's spot. I'm not going to Duke, motherfucker. And they were like, two of them were cool. And then UNC writes me a letter like, congratulations, you have been accepted to University of North Carolina.
Man.
I was like, go and listen to us. Took some poor kid's spot. It's like, really wanted to go to UNC and get in because they let me in. And they didn't read my letter or email. Can't remember which.
So who was your freshman year roommate at Duke?
My freshman year roommate was Jordan Baltes.
From?
I think he's from Texas.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How was that? You guys get along?
No, we didn't get along. We almost got a fight at the end, and then he moved out.
Really?
Yeah.
Does that mean you had, like, the place to yourself
for
a little while?
Yeah, for, like, the end of freshman year. It just became dope. My beat laboratory.
So you were working on beats, like, in your dorm room?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So first it was on, in Michigan, it was on my mom's laptop. And there was this kid that I met. I used to go on these, like, online rap like chat room forums, and you would post to your like 16 just in writing, and people would like comment on it and stuff.
Do you remember which one?
SOHH and stuff, or like All Hip Hop or something. All I remember those like things.
Yeah, or Rap they, Godfathers. They had that wasn't the one. I don't remember the name of the one I went on. The site I loved the most to listen to but was hiphop-game.com.
Yeah, sure.
That was the one. I bet that site, if you pull it up, looks exactly the same right now.
Yeah.
I remember I checked it like, you know, I probably started checking it, like going to it in, I don't know, 2003.
Yeah.
I remember looking at it like 2013, and it was just like this exact same design. I was like, this is just some trill shit. <you know?
laughs> So what kind of computer did your mom have, by the way?
We had like a Gateway or something like that. It was a PC. And anyway, so why I was telling this long meandering story about hip hop forums was I met this kid on a forum named The Grocery Man. And he, like, somehow it turned out he was, like, 13 also. He was Jewish also.
By the way,
he's
I could definitely
also.
Tell he was 13 with that name.
I know, The Grocery Man.
You guys know The Grocery Man?
No. Yeah, he's okay. Famous. By the name. No,
Yeah. And he sent me this. We would talk on AIM.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I got an MPC for my bar mitzvah. And I was like, so how do you make beats? And, you know, how do you make? He's like, I use this program. He sent me this program called Cool Edit Pro. And he had a fake name and password. The name was Peter Keistgaard. I still remember. Shout outs to Peter Keistgaard. And so then I got a little keyboard from Best Buy, and I would just, you know, you could layer tracks. But there was no quantize. You guys know what quantize
is? Yeah.
So, do your listeners know, or should we explain?
No, go ahead. You can explain.
Well, quantize is like when you play something, when you're making a beat, it will put it exactly on time.
Right.
If you use a quant, you can fix it, and you can use it of varying gradation. So if you want it to be like super robot, you can put 100%. If you're Jay Dilla, you never use quantize. And that's why his stuff, it swings, you know. So I didn't have quantize, and I just couldn't figure out. I was like, man, Dr. Dre hits those buttons like perfectly. Like, how does he do it? And then finally I moved on to like FL Studio. And
is that Fruity Loops?
Fruity Loops, mm-hmm. The free version. And I got a better keyboard, a Motif, Yamaha Motif ES, which I read in Scratch magazine. It was like what Scott Storch and Dre used.
Yeah.
And then I could make beats all on that keyboard. And it was around this time I met, I started interning at a radio station. Detroit.
Which one?
It was called Hot 102.7.
Is it still around?
It's on a different channel now.
Okay.
So it means like Hot 105.9 or something like that. I don't know. It's something different. And I used to work down there. I was an intern, and there was this kid I worked with named Pat Piff, who was a rapper. And he was like, yeah, I'm in a group with my boy Sean. And he's like, Kanye's going to sign Sean, but he doesn't want to sign me. So he was like kind of heartbroken at the time, but he was a sick MC. I started doing beats for him. And he introduced me to Sean. Sean turned out to be Big Sean.
Yeah.
You know, so he would come over to my house, my mom's house rather, my mom and dad's house, and I would do beats for him, record him and whatnot. And
what was Sean's name at that time? Was
the
he Big Sean?
Man.
He was like a topic of conversation. Because he was like getting signed. Yeah, he didn't know what his name was. Like, we'd call him Sean. He would go by Sean the Don a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, I guess it was like between that and Big Sean, I think.
Which side of the line did you fall on?
I was a bit impartial, you know.
You were like, you're not really like tall.
Well, wait, what name did you make beats under?
I always went by Mike Posner because
real name, no gimmicks.
Yeah, I just decided at age.
Shout out to Obie Trice.
Yeah, like maybe age 13, 14. By age 13, 14, I was, you know, I was recording my own shit. So I was all rap shit, you know. I made a rap album when I was 18, saw the trunk of my car. That was my first album. It's called Reflections of the Lost of a Lost Team.
Wow.
And like some of it's on the internet, not all of it. I forgot why I started this tangent. What are we talking
sounds
about?
Sounds like you're
Sean?
A lost adult.
You know? I am.
No, but you were
commiserations of a currently lost adult.
But yeah. So Kanye does sign Sean.
He signs Sean.
And was that just mind blowing?
Yeah, so I met Sean the end of high school and I went to Duke and I remember I telling him like, you know, if I could, we were in my parents' house one time and I was like, if I could just have a house like this and do music, I'm good. Like, that would be great. He looked at me like I was fucking nuts. And he goes, not me. I want it all. And those things seemed really far away. Like, you know, when you're just in your mom's basement or you're in your dorm room, like, getting a record deal, that seemed like a million miles away. You have a song on the radio, a million miles away. Doing the Seth Meyers show or playing with the Roots on Jimmy Fallon, 3 million miles away. And you know, suddenly this guy that I rapped with a lot, you know, we used to at the same radio station I interned at, we used to rap on the air, they had Friday Night Cypher, and I used to rap with Sean, we freestyle together, and I always thought I was like better. I thought I was the best, you know. I thought, you know, I'm just a dickhead
better than Pat Piff.
Yeah, I thought I was the best. Yeah. You know, and I'm sure they all thought they were the best, you know. And when he got signed, you know, when I met him, he already knew Kanye.
Yeah.
But it was this process. I think Kanye was like vetting him in some way. He would send music and he would be like, yeah, we're gonna get the deal done. And it was just like dragged on for a long time. And when he got signed, it was like, whoa, if he could get signed, then like I probably can too.
Well, so you
and
go down,
all those things were no longer a million miles away. They were right. They were at arm's length.
But you go down to Duke, and I mean, what are you majoring in? Do you choose your major at this point?
I choose my major like junior year. I think things were starting to get a little more serious with my music. Like by then, I had started my band, Mike Posner and the Brain Trust, and when it came time to choose my major, honestly, I was looking for something that just was easy, so I could focus on music.
What's easy at Duke?
Psychology.
So I did Soc.
Oh, so yeah.
I was close.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Psych is like, yeah, those are considered the easy one. Yeah. I mean, like I took Calc freshman year, and it was the hardest class I ever took. You know, I was so used to being the smartest kid in my whole high school, and I remember I got an A on the first Calc test, and the second one I got an F. You know, I'd never gotten a C before. I had one B plus from my dick band teacher, and the rest of my report cards were A's, A minus.
No, he was right.
You know, and so I got an F. I was like, whoa! It was the first time in my life where just my best just wasn't even close to good enough because I really studied for it. And they got a D, and on the next one, and by this time, Sean was working with our friends Right Tracks. They were a production duo, and they would do beats for Sean. And, you know, I got called like, hey, Right Tracks is getting signed by Kanye too. And I'm at Duke and I'm like, I just was so fucking jealous. And I felt like I was in the wrong spot. Like I should be in Detroit doing the beats for Sean, not here failing fucking Calc tests. Like who cares about this shit?
With your terrible roommate.
Yeah. And so I was really heartbroken at the time. I felt like that should have been me. But I just kept doing music, you know, and eventually, I don't know why I started doing this, but I was just like, it would be cool if I like sang my raps, like sang how me as a rap fan would want to hear a rapper sing, you know. So when it's like we say, Like, even my song Cooler Than Me, which ended up being a big song, mm-hmm. like, it's kind of got a rhyme scheme that a rapper would use. So you got designer shades to hide your face. Like, that's the shit I wanted to hear as a hip-hop fan. I never really heard anyone sing it, like, put melody to it in that way. I mean, obviously, you got, like, kind of the rap singer. There wasn't the first one to, like, flow in and sing, but... Yeah, that was like, I don't know why I started doing that, but I just started, you know, after doing music since, like, I started writing raps when I was 8, you know, so at that time I was like maybe 20, 21, so, you know, I'm 12, 13 years in, and I stumbled on something that was my sound.
Did you have and confidence in your sound?
When I started doing it? Yeah. Yeah, I had, like, I did, man. I always thought, it was weird, this weird thing, I always thought, like, our band was going to be big. And the other two guys in the band quit.
What was the setup, by the way?
Yeah, it was me, and I was like the MC / producer, and I would sing some of the time. And then there was a guy named Eric Holgis, who's in a wonderful band named Delta Ray now.
Oh.
And he's just amazingly talented. And he was like the real singer and played like keys and guitar. And then we had a guitarist named Jeff O.
So all your drums are programmed?
All drums are programmed. And so, like, at the time, Jack Johnson was really big. And I had this, like, scheme of doing, like, us being, like, the hip-hop Jack Johnson group. And I was going to do, like, Dilla-style drums, no 808s, like, Dilla kits and over, like, acoustic guitars with hooks and verses. And
but you wore shoes, and that's the big difference.
That's right, between you and Jack Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wearing, like, Hyperflights at the time and, like, Nike Tuned Airs, you know, with matching polo shirts. So bad. And
it's a different time, Mike.
Yeah. You know? And I was telling Jeff earlier, my friend Jeff, who's here with us, was like, we went to record Cooler Than Me, and we had, like, the song written, and Jeff, our guitarist, was playing acoustic, so we're doing this. And then I said, record some electric just for fun. And then when I took the files back to make the beat, it was just like the electric was just sounded doper.
Yeah.
So I had to abandon my little, like, marketing scheme because the music was just different. It just came out a different way. And I always say that to musicians that are starting, like, what do I do? It's like, you just got to make music, and you have to stumble on it. And then, you know... Eventually, I outgrew that sound, and it was scary because, you know, like, all those songs back then were about girls at school, or they were about smoking pot or partying, you know, and as I got older, I stopped doing all those things. I still do girls every once in a while if I'm lucky, but the prowl, you know, it's like the misogynist, like, hunting of women, I'm not so into that anymore. And I don't smoke pot anymore. I don't drink anymore. So it was like, for a while, it was very scary. Like, oh, I have to find my sound again, you know? And I think I did with this new album.
Yeah.
Where I kind of liked it. It was very influenced by country music, you know?
Totally.
And I'm at some point, like, this is going to stop being cool to me, and I'll be naked out of my shell another... what we say, currently a lost adult.
Yeah. You know? No, but I think that you being naked, that was actually your video.
Yeah. You're be as you are life. Video. I'm yeah. naked.
Well, okay, so, yeah, so you're at Duke. How do you get to, was it RCA at the time?
Yeah.
How do you get there?
We recorded the end of sophomore year. I wrote these, like, maybe 5 songs for my band. And we record, like, we went in, there was a studio there at the school, and they gave me the key, because I use it a lot. So we record all the guitars, and I was taking the beats back. And I was like, you know, before I leave for summer, I want to get these 5 songs done. And one of the songs was Cooler Than Me. And that summer, I went to work for Def Jux. so you guys nod your head. I don't know if all your listeners know. Def Jux is LP's label, who's half of Run the Jewels.
Run the Jewels, yes.
And so he was my boss. I was an intern. And I used to do things like, at first they had an office, and I would do things like, you know, normal interns, like change the copier ink and, you know, get people coffee and work on the website, etc. And then they had a falling out with, like, the people I shared the office with. And the office for the rest of my tenure that summer was moved to LP's house. And so I would do it, like, my job description changed from, like, changing the ink toner to, like,
changing
LP's cat litter. And, like, he had this defunct hot tub that I sawed into little pieces and put into garbage bags and took out. But he was like, he was a tough boss, but on the last day I left my demo, I didn't want to be like, you know, I'm working here to get signed or whatever. I was cold calling the labels, and I'll go and try to sell beats. And I had Cooler to Me just in my pocket, but I wasn't really trying to do it. I was trying to sell beats. And I never sold any. I had means of like G-Unit and like Atlantic and whatnot. I would just say, hey, I'm Big Sean, one of Big Sean's producers. And they would let me come in and play beats. And the last day I left my demo with Def Jux, and they hit, like, one of the people hit me back and was like, LP thinks you're going to be huge.
That's, you know, amazing.
So I was like, that's really dope. He didn't even tell me himself, but he just told me. And then, like, at some point he hit me back and was like, your stuff's really fucking good, man.
That's awesome.
Do you still have a relationship with him?
I haven't talked to him in years. But yeah. I gotta respect him, man.
If you need somebody, I mean, nobody's been feeding his cat this entire time.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't they do like a cat album?
Meow the Jewels. Yeah.
Dude, it's amazing.
With Just Blaze did some stuff on that.
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Woo.
So, okay. So they say your stuff's cool. At what point do you get management?
Almost a year later.
So you're just doing all this on your own?
Well, yeah. I was just, you know, I believed in the stuff, and of course. Had the kind of this, like, this ethos that I've abandoned a little bit, but it was just take every opportunity. You don't know what it's going to be. So the end of that summer, I moved back to Michigan. I didn't move. I just, like, my internship ended. I went home for, like, a week or two, and then I was going to go back to Duke for junior year. And I'm on, like, in northern Michigan with my family. And Sean calls, and he's like, hey, I got tickets to Glow in the Dark in New York. Come with me to MSG. Jay-Z's coming. I could probably introduce you to Kanye again and Jay-Z. Because by this time, he'd heard... I'm not sure if he was on Cooler Than Me yet. I think he'd heard Cooler Than Me, and he loved it. And I was like, man, that's amazing, but I'm in Michigan. And the show was like the next night. And I sort of, like, you know, I sort of, like, stayed on the phone and was, like, silent for a minute. And I was like, I should just book a flight, huh? And he was like, yeah, you should. And I looked at it. I think it was, like, $1,000, which was, like, a lot of money to me at the time. But I was like, fuck it, man. I got to do it, you know. I got to do it. So I booked a flight, and I flew back to New York. I still had my apartment in New York, but nothing was in it. And so he was like, go to Will Call. Don C, you're on Don C's list. So I go to Will Call. I went with my friend George. We're like, yeah, we got some tickets on Don C. They're like, no, there's nothing here for you. So I call Sean. I'm like, dude, they said there's no tickets here. He's like, all right, just meet me at the studio. I'm like, well, that's better. And so that worked out well. So we go to the studio, and he's like, he comes out and meets me. He's like, you and George just wait here in the lounge. And like most studios, especially the bigger rooms, they always have like a chill room for, like, I guess, managers and people who don't do music to, like, be in while the artist
is. And what studio is this?
I can't remember the name. It was on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
Of New York. I remember it. What are those avenues over there?
Yeah.
Like, they're high numbers, right?
Oh, like, yeah, oh, so it was uptown? Nine.
Was it like Jungle City or something?
I don't know. Yeah, well, it sounds kind of familiar. No, like, it wasn't Jungle
or
City.
Or like any, like, you're talking about like Amsterdam or Columbus or
any other west side. No, it doesn't go like 11th, 10th, yeah. Like, or 10th, yeah. 11th, 12th.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was on the west side. And you're by the water at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was by the water.
Okay.
I don't remember.
It's out of business now because there's no more studios in Manhattan.
Right. And, so I'm chilling in the room, and I hear, right, the other room is 808s and Heartbreak is being made while Kanye's on the tour, which I think a lot of people don't realize. Like, you're on a world fucking tour. There's a lot of work busy. And he made that album on the road, which is nuts,
yeah.
You know? So, like, I hear, like, and then, like, you know, I think Malik Youssef is in the room. He plays a song. And then I hear a song, Who Knows, which is a song I did for Sean, where I produced and I did the hook on. And I'm just like, okay, Kanye West is listening to my song right now. There's probably, you know, there's probably three or four people in the world that can just change my life right now. One's Pharrell at the time, one's Dr. Dre, one's Jay-Z, and one's Kanye West. If he likes this, my whole life could change. Like Sean's already has. So, and I met Kanye before in Detroit, Golden Dog. He's always a nice guy to me. But he didn't like remember me or anything. So then they leave. They're going to MSG to do Glow in the Dark. And Sean goes, "Hey, yay, this is Mike Posner. He did the song I just played you." Yay, fist bumps. And he goes, "Cool." And I go, it's kind of another awkward silence. And I go, "So did you like it?" Which I'm proud of myself for doing.
Yeah.
You know? "So did you like it?" And he looks at me, he goes, "Not really, man." He goes, "Nah." He goes, "Maybe I could be for Lupe's album, but not for Big Sean's. It's not right for his." And my heart kind of dropped. And I think maybe he read that on my face. And he goes, he rattles off this fucking nuts analogy that, like, I guess makes Kanye Kanye. He goes, "Sorry, man. You bumped it. Or Sean bumped it. You said it. Had to spike it." And I'm like, "Well, that's amazing, you know." and we all get in this elevator, and it's like real. And I remember in that elevator ride down, all I wanted to do is go make more music. I didn't want to quit. I didn't have to psych myself up to not want to quit. I just wanted to go make more. I knew there was more in me.
So Kanye did change your life.
Yeah, I suppose he did, you know. And so we end up going to that concert. Jay-Z comes out and they go, "Blueprint 3 coming soon." And they walk off stage. It was nuts night, you know. They announced Blueprint 3. And then Sean, he ended up sleeping on, like, the couch, like, at my empty apartment. I think I slept on the floor that night. And so you know, I had this song, Cooler Than Me. And Sean, by this time, he's hanging out with Pharrell. And he's starting his first album. And Tim, I think, like, The Dream and Kanye. And he hears Cooler Than Me. And he goes, "This is, like, a hit song." And I was like, what does that mean? You know, I'm not signed or anything. So I'm just like, "Hey, man, I'm just trying to do shit with you. Like, as much shit I can, like, beats I can get on Sean, or, like, song I can do with Sean, like, people just listen to me." He goes, "This is, like, a hit song." I'm like, "All right, whatever. Like, so you want to get on it?" He's like, "Yeah." So he came to my mom's house this summer, and we did that. We did a verse to Cooler Than Me together. When me and Sean work, a lot of times he'll help write my hooks, and help write his verses. And, so we did that, and I put Cooler Than Me, you know, and then I was playing more people my beats, and I'll sometimes play people Cooler Than Me. Everyone liked that better than my beats. And so I ended up putting it out. I put it on, which is very serendipitous, on okplayer.com. For those who have been listening and forgot because they're high on marijuana and stuffing their faces with Doritos.
Do you remember your name, like your account name?
On okplayer.com?
Yeah.
No. But this was on the okplayer.com blog.
Yeah.
So they posted Cooler Than Me. They were the first ones. And then Two Dope Boys posted it. And everyone liked it and stuff, and kind of, like, circulated the internet. And that's when, the end of that summer, I also met Scooter Braun, who managed Asher Roth at the time. I actually hired him at the time, but then he ended up being, like, really busy. And we're still friends. I would say this, in his, like, if he was here, like, he stopped, like, picking up the phone. And so I was like, "Dude, I guess you can't be my manager, because, like, we don't ever."
"You're not managing me."
"Yeah, we don't talk." Like, and he was like, "It's all good. Like, I'm just really busy with Asher." And by the way, I have this kid named Justin Bieber who's cool. You know, like, I knew who Justin Bieber was.
And you're like, "Not cooler than me."
Oh,
hello. You know?
That's why they pay you $50. And so I met Scooter and Ash. Ash actually did a verse to Cooler Than Me.
Really?
That, like, we never finished. And so we put Cooler Than Me out, da da da. I was like, it's tricky. And then by then I met Dan Weissman, who you guys know. Mm-hmm. And he ended up becoming, I guess, my first manager, like, for real. And he told me, before I hired him, he said, "You should do a mixtape." And that wasn't, I didn't really think of that. And so I did it, and I made this mixtape, and Sean gave me three verses, and I put it out March 1st, 2009, and people just fucking liked that shit.
It was all over the rap blogs. Thanks, it was man. Moving.
It was big in my apartment.
And it was great. No, really. It was great.
And
we saw some of your first shows. We saw SOBs. We saw you somewhere else, too.
That's love, man.
No, I
Webster Hall or something?
I don't remember.
Or Irving?
Irving Plaza.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, man, you changed, you know, your whole, like, vibe up, and people were really feeling it.
Yeah. I've done that a couple times.
Yeah.
At least in my own mind. I don't know how much that reads, but, you know, that was tough for me. And I think, you know, these are first world problems, but, you know, when you finish college, I think a lot of people have a little bit of an identity crisis. Like, okay, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? And it's hard to figure that answer out. I kind of knew what I should be doing, but I still felt all those same growing pains, and they were compounded by the fact that I was, like, popular. And I wasn't very you know, I always had friends growing up, but I wasn't, like, one of the popular kids ever. And all of a sudden, like, everyone just wanted to be friends with me. And I know that sounds great on the surface, but there's a threshold where it becomes a bit overwhelming. And, you know, this Sean and I became pretty close at this time because there was no one else I knew that was really dealing with that. And I wasn't so good at dealing with it. And I think, you know, part of our job as humans, I don't know, it's the way I look at my life, is to, like, learn and evolve and become better. And the first time I really, like, changed my sound was I did two mixtapes and then I did my first album. And when I started doing my first album, I wasn't listening to a lot of hip hop at the time. I was just listening to, like, different stuff, like, more. I was actually listening to like EDM. It was before EDM was, like, really popping. Like,
right.
And I was like, what I was into. And so my album sounded like that. And there's a couple, like, more hip hop jams. Like, we got some Boys to Men on there.
Mm-hmm. Was Bow Chicka Wow Wow on the album or the mixtape?
Yeah, it was on the album.
That was with Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
Or the
Lil ones. Wayne verse came after the album.
Right.
Because he was in jail. But, but that was the first time I really switched my sound from my mixtape to an album. And a lot of people just fucking hated it. A lot of my fans, you sold out. You signed a record deal. You suck now. And that I was not good at dealing with that at the time, admittedly. Those things, those words really hurt. you know, and then I had a lot of success, especially with success. I said access. A lot of access.
You had no success access. In pronouncing success.
Yeah, you know. And with the song Cooler Than Me especially. You know, I was kind of like, I was just holding on really tight. I was praying around the world, fornicating, making more money than I deserved, taking my shirt off at shows. And eventually, you know, my songs were just started to become progressively less popular. And so I became progressively less popular. And people stopped, you know, hitting me up all the time. And it took me about 2 years to like find some sense of identity post success. Like, who am I now that I'm not popular anymore? Who am I now that no one, like, the girls don't want to bang me, like, just
yeah, blind
for no night. Reason yeah. tonight, right. You know, who am I? And it took a while, man. It took a while. And then you know, just like we do as humans, we learn more. And I think I got to a spot where I was really happy in my life, you know, like, so it was 5 years since I had put out an album. I had two albums on RCA got shelved.
Well, yeah. So can you just talk about that process?
Sure. 'Cause
I think there's a lot of people who don't understand the process of being on a major label and turning stuff in.
Yeah. So,
and you had such major success with your first album.
Yeah. For me, my first single ever was Cooler Than Me.
Right.
And it was this big song and, I took it for granted. Because it was my first one. And I thought, oh, it's just what happens. We put a single out, you know. So my next song was Please Don't Go. And it was a hit. It sold, you know, it went platinum a couple of times in the U.S. But it sold less than Cooler Than Me. So it's like, I feel like in the record label's mind, it's a failure.
Right.
And third is Bow Chicka. And it sold, also hit, sold 1 million. And, but less than Please Don't Go. And the trend continued. And then I put out a song called, I think Looks Like Sex was next. And I put out a mixtape called The Layover.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did another single called Way It Used To Be. And these all sold like progressively less. And then I did a song with Sean, Top of the World. By this time, I'm just putting it on my own because the label, you know, they're watching the graph just go from top left, you know, the red line.
Right. Yeah.
Top left to bottom right. You know,
was Top of the World, was that the Mike Will one?
No, Diplo and Benny Blanco.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I've never worked with Mike Will. But, you know, so in their mind, they're a business. And they say, hey, we got this thing. He's selling less and less and less and less. We're going to stop putting money behind it now. So I have this album that's done. And it was the first album that got showed was a record called Sky High. Pharrell did, like, we did, like, 10 joints. I think I was maybe using, like, 3 or 4.
Jeez.
Record with J. Cole on there. Record with Big Sean on there. It was. And Boyfriend for Justin Bieber was on there. It was my song first. And
same theme, same like hook or?
Yeah, it was the same song. Well, wow. the lyrics and the verse changed because they were all about me.
Right.
And I was talking about banging girls. And he was 16, so he toned it down a little bit. by the way, I think he was banging girls.
Yeah, sure, time, sure. Yeah.
But he didn't talk about it in his songs
I don't
yet.
Know. It's like prove it, you know?
Yeah. And so yeah, they were like, you know, we can't really. We've spent X amount of money, which is a lot of money. Like when they pay you in advance, so they pay me, you know, something in six figures, which is just it just goes in my pocket, and then they pay all the when I'm doing sessions for the studios and the flights, you know. So they've invested all this money, and I'm not returning any of it. Or my songs aren't returning any of it. So, we're not going to spend more money to promote and put out this album. Me, also, we'd have to pay all these producers, you know, so.
Pharrell's not cheap.
Yeah, Pharrell, and at the time, he was much cheaper. At the time, he was ice cold. And that's why I got to do 10 songs with him, you know. But he, wow, is he a talented guy.
Yeah. Was that down in Miami?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We really worked, like, we had a 10-day block. Which is insane when you
that
think
is.
About it, you know, a 10-day block.
What was it like first meeting him?
When I first met him, the second show I ever did, the first show I did not at Duke was opening for him. And so I met him there, and he took a picture of my mixtape. And it was like, and then someone stole the camera it was on. It was like heartbreaking. So I met him there, and then I opened up for him again in Dubai later. And he was
I'm
always,
sure it was exactly the same.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, this time I had like my first record out, and he was cool. And then I was rooming with Polo Don at Record Plant in
LA.
In LA, and I walked down the hall and I saw Pharrell. And I said, "P, how are you, man?" I was like, "I really want to show you some of the stuff I'm working on," you know. And he was like, "Cool." So I went and played him this song called "Get Down." That I still haven't put out. Justin Bieber cut it, but I wanted to keep it. We might do it. Might be like a duet type thing.
Whoa.
But it's not even on this album either. It's just like, you know, one of the many songs on my laptop. Too many songs on my laptop. And so I played. So he loved it, and so we booked some sessions. And like I said, like he wasn't popular at the time. You know, he was working with a lot of people. Like he was like really. It was really cool, man, getting to spend that much time with him. And then, like, it's kind of like the George Clooney thing where it's like you can wear, like, the coolest outfit in your closet and he's going to wear a white T-shirt and jeans and you're going to look way less dope than him in whatever pictures you take that day, you know? And so there's, like, a little bit of that. And some of the stuff that we did came out sounding a little Justin Timberlake-y.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was just fucking dope. You know, something was dope.
So did you guys collaborate on the beats as well?
No, mostly he did the beats in that session. In that session.
So so RCA is like, look, the return on investment is not really up to par right
so
now.
So it's like, you know, they do what's called shelving you in the industry, which is like they just hold on. You know, if something happens, like, you know, if you put a song out on your own, it does well, okay, we're there, and then we'll pour the gasoline on the spark. But if not, like, you're just going to sit here. And so then by that time, like, I was, you know, I just love doing music. So I did, like, another album after that. Another album was called Pages. Another dope album. Who's on that? There was there was poems on this album, and it was like the pages of my notebook. And I'm working on getting the rights to these back, so hopefully they'll see the light.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, because you had said, like, there was a song that you and Justin were now working on. I was like, doesn't RCA own that? So
yeah, technically, yeah. So I have to broker these deals with them. And basically what I have to do is contact all these producers and musicians that helped me make the music and tell them, hey, I had to pay you out of pocket. Are you okay taking less than you normally do in an effort to put this stuff out? Otherwise, it just stays on the laptop forever. And mostly everyone's been fucking really cool about it so far. So, you know, we're in the process.
Is there anybody you want to call out on this podcast and say, yo,
no.
Your fucking business?
No. Everyone's been so cool. Like, Diplo is, like, basically, you know, like, basically got like a track. Like, I did a song for him. He's like, let me get a track for fucking free, you know, which is a, I don't know if I should even say that, but it's just really cool of him. You know, everyone's been really cool.
Was there ever a point where did RCA own the name Mike Posner at that point?
No, they don't own the name, I don't think. But at some point I had to, like, that second album was dope too. We had like I had poems as interludes. Mm-hmm. I told you I like poetry, so I had different people read my poetry. I had Bieber reading a poem. I had 2 Chainz reading a poem.
What?
And I had my mom read a poem and Dr. Wayne Dyer read a poem. If you guys,
oh my
know
god,
who that is,
that's amazing.
I don't know who's Dr. Wayne Dyer.
He's like this, like, they call him like the father of inspiration. He does like lectures that make you feel good.
I would disagree. And, he's and from say Detroit. 2 Chainz is the father of mm-hmm. inspiration.
Mm-hmm. You know, for some people, he is. Yeah. And also, Sugar was on that album.
Man,
it became the Maroon 5 Sugar later. So then at this point, you know, like, my lawyers, my manager, hey, are you guys cool if you let Mike go? And they let me go. And I didn't knew, you know, this time I was like, I was kind of stumbled on this new country sound, you know. I was listening to like guys like Merle Haggard and Hank Williams and Hank Williams Jr. None of which any of your listeners have ever heard before.
No, our listeners are big Dixie Chicks fans.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're all right. Huge on Dixie Chicks.
I've made a lot of generalizations about your listeners, you know.
Wait,
where are unfair.
Where are you living at this point?
This point, I have a house in L.A. I bought a house maybe 3 years ago, but I lived in L.A. right after I finished Duke a semester early because I did summer school.
Right.
And I moved to L.A. For a while, I stayed at Duke for like a month. I thought this would be great. I'll live at college, but I won't have class.
So Van Wilder.
No, yeah, and then like I was touring. I would do these like shows at like other schools, and they'd for all intents and purposes like throw a party for me. I'd do like my little bullshit like DJ show,
right?
And we'd have these wild nights. Sean would be at a lot of them, you know. And I'd come back and like the same shit would be going on in my house. And there was just no break. Like my feet stuck to the floor in my house.
Damn.
Because of the keggers we were throwing.
I mean, that were being thrown at your
that
house.
That were being thrown at my house. But I say we, like, my friends. And I was like, I just got to go. So I moved to L.A.
And if you don't mind me asking, what section of town in L.A., like, did you live in?
Originally, I lived in a guest house in West Hollywood, which was behind, like, it was just like a little one bed, what they call a studio, where it's just one big room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Behind like a main house.
Yeah.
And I stayed in there for a while, man. I had plaques in that little guest house, you know? And then finally Weissman was like, dude, I'm going to start looking for a new place for you to live. I'm just going to do that. I was like, why?
It's because Weissman couldn't fit in your house.
Yeah, he's a refrigerator with a head.
Guy. And I stayed there for, you know, they basically forced me out because they started doing construction on the thing next to it, and there was a point where there was a hole in my wall, and they just put a piece of like a huge, like a refrigerator sized rectangle, like a doorway sized hole in my wall, and they just like took a like big piece of like paper, was it like construction quality paper, like that brown paper, and just taped it on, and there was like jackhammers and shit. I couldn't record anymore. And I was like hopping over like this construction zone again, my little guest house.
Yo,
and I was, like,
if
I
it wasn't
go.
Like keg parties down in North Carolina or like construction.
And I had a good
like
two,
a giant glory hole in your wall.
Yeah, I had a Weissman sized glory hole in my wall. I had a good 2-3 years there. I moved to Laurel Canyon for like a month. I moved to Beechwood Canyon a couple years, and then I bought my first home.
Congratulations!
In the Hollywood Hills.
Nice.
And I now I live recently with my mom and dad in Detroit.
Nice.
And I have my friend is staying in my house in L.A.
Do your feet still stick to the floor?
In which house?
Your parents? You know?
No.
So, okay, so you start listening to country just on a whim, or?
No, I hung out. My friend Jake Owen, who's a wonderful country artist, wonderful human, he used to cover Bow Chicka Wow Wow on his sets. And, you know, I was in Nashville one time. I was like, you know, me with these guys, basically trying to, like, sell songs.
Yeah.
You know, to country singers. Because I just got, like, fucking million songs on my laptop, you know? And they were like, you know, Jake Owen covers your song. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I didn't really know who he was. They're like, no, you don't understand. Jake Owen's a big fucking deal. Like, he sings your song, like, every night on his tour. And so we ended up, like, talking on Twitter. And one night he's in L.A. at the Sunset Marquee. Mm-hmm. He invited me. We hung out. And we just had a great fucking time. Like, we were passing the guitar. We recorded a couple things.
Is that Nightbird Studios?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that place, by the way.
It's so good.
I've worked with, like, tons of people, like 2 Chainz, and but did the Boyz II Men song there.
Whoa.
Deja Vu.
Yeah.
And
wait, a song with Boyz
II Men? Yeah, my first album, I had a song called Deja Vu.
Oh, Boyz II Men. Right, gotcha. You know, I thought you were experiencing Deja Vu.
They did the backgrounds, and we just put it as background, but we should have put featuring Boyz II Men, which you didn't, and I regret that.
What was that talking about?
Nightbird.
Or did you call 4?
3.
Okay, yeah.
3.
Sunset Marquee and Jake Owen came out there.
Yeah, and Jake Owen. And so we're passing the guitar. And he, you know, I was showing him my songs. He's like, these are great. And he was singing me like these Hank Jr. songs that were blowing my mind. He's singing his song. And I go, this is the best song I've ever heard. I go, did you write this? He goes, no, it was a Hank Jr. song. And, so then we're like, you know, we're just, we hung out again the next night. And we're just passing the guitar, play one I'd written, and he'd play one he'd written, back and forth. And I told this story a bunch, but I think it warrants repeating in that I played an old tune of mine, and he says, what inspired the lyrics of that? I said, it's about a girl from New York and some of the shit I just made up. And he looked at me, he goes, why don't you just tell the truth? He goes, you know, there's some people out there just tell the fucking truth and they don't care. And I didn't really have an answer for him. And I knew in my heart, like, the songs he was singing me, like, I could do my version of that. Like, the stories Merle Haggard would tell and the stories Willie Nelson would tell and, like, the songs, like, Me and Paul. Like, I could do that. It was hip-hop. You know, they're just telling the truth. Like, but the stories weren't about, like, selling dope or, like, shooting someone. They were about...
Well, sometimes shooting people. But
yeah. Sometimes shooting people. But they were about, like, being famous and falling from fame, which was what I was experiencing. If you listen to a song like Blues Man by Hank Jr., it's like, you know, he's like, I got cuffed on dirt roads. I got sued over no shows. You know, it was all shit he did. Like, he would be drunk and coked out on the tour bus and miss the show. I got cuffed on dirt road. What a line that is.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't that paint a picture in your head?
It's cuffed on dirt roads.
Yeah, so, you know, I got in the airplane. I was going to the Winter Olympics that night, and I was on a long flight, and...
It was a Delta.
I think it would. I hope it was. I fucking love Delta. Delta and Hampton Inn, man. God, I love those two brands.
Not currently in a Hampton Inn right now, but just for the record.
I don't know if there's. Is there Hampton Inns in Manhattan? I don't think I ever stayed in one in Manhattan.
There might be.
There might be, actually.
This podcast is sponsored by Hampton Inn. Manhattan.
This version of Mike Posner has been brought to you by Delta Airlines, yes. Justin Bieber, yeah, Adidas Footwear, and Coldplay.
Yeah, let's do a quick...
Sorry, I just have to do that.
Yeah. This era of Mike Posner.
And so that night, you know, I leave the studio. I'm flying after hanging out with Jake. Basically leave the studio, go right to the airport, and I wrote, took a pill in Ibiza on that flight. You know, just trying to tell the truth.
Which is your truth, right?
Yeah, and I got over to Russia and, like, figured the chords out. And this kind of opened up Pandora's box. I was like, whoa, I can just say what's really going on?
Okay, are you signed at Island at this point?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I had basically this all the songs written. No, I definitely was not.
Okay.
Definitely was not. And then this opened up. I would write more songs like Buried in Detroit, and I would just tell these stories. Like, you know, I don't claim to be a prophet. I just speak my mind. I try to tell like it is, and sometimes God makes it rhyme. I like my songs how I like my women, honest and to the point. I got fucked up in Stockholm, but I'll be buried in Detroit next to my father and my father's father too. Used to live in New York City, but there ain't no substitute. You know, not from my hometown. That place people avoid. What's my next line? I've been to a lot of places, but I'll be buried in Detroit. Some Man. Shit like that, you know? And so I just wrote a bunch of songs like that, and I was having so much fun doing it. And it just became this album that I'm putting out. I don't know if this podcast will be out by then. But it'll it comes out
this week.
This album that is out.
Yeah, it's currently out right now. Go get that on iTunes.
Yeah, or at Best Buy.
Yeah.
You know, or Spotify.
Yeah,
you know,
go stream that.
Or fucking pirate that show. Does anyone pirate anymore?
Yes, they really do.
Hey, yeah. You know, you can pirate my album. I'm cool with that, you know. Especially if you never heard my shit before and you're a pirater. I'd like for you to pirate.
It's just a pirate.
Yeah, and you're a pirate. Thank you for correcting me, you know.
Okay, so
I'd encourage that. No, you know what I mean?
Cause shout out to Island Records right now.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask someone to buy something from an artist they never heard before.
That's very fair.
So listen, if you kind of like the shit I've been talking the last 45 minutes, and you're on the fence, just pirate it. You pirate you, and correct usage right there.
Yeah, there you go.
And see what you think. See what you think. Maybe you'll come to a show later. Maybe not. I'm cool with that. It's all love here.
So, all right. So you're doing a lot of press around. I took a pill in Ibiza.
Yeah, too much.
Second line of it saying
not
that,
enough.
Wait, really? Too much? I mean,
some days too much. So but like, I like doing the press. Especially I like doing the press of things that I listen to or I think like this is really cool. Mm-hmm. Wednesday I get to do NPR. That's all things considered.
Like too much like Molly.
Oh, too much. I've done Molly a couple times. I'm not a big Molly guy. I am a mushrooms guy.
Yeah, yeah, I read an interview that like you do it every like 5 or 6 months.
Or so. That doesn't make me a mushrooms guy, right?
You know? I don't think so.
You dabble.
Yeah. I dabble in mushrooms, yeah.
But my question was, like, has anybody ever asked you if Avicii was impressed?
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me that.
See, I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of people have asked me that. He told me, he was like, I didn't know you were on pill. I thought you were just drunk, you know?
So
he's funny about the whole thing, man.
Cool. Yeah, now he quit music all because of you.
I think he only quit. I read his note.
Mm-hmm.
Is like,
yeah, he quit touring.
He just quit touring.
Yeah.
And from my time with him, he was like, I never thought I was going to be doing shows. Like, I just make beats.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I get it. You know, he was like, that's never really what I wanted to do. I just like making beats and like writing songs, and he's fucking damn good at it. You know, I've worked a lot with him over the years. He's really talented, so and a lot impressed. Of those songs he writes the melodies. You know, other people do the words.
Mm-hmm.
Those big hits, you know, he comes up with those those Swedes, man.
Yeah,
they got melodies.
Yeah,
Max Martin and fucking Avicii. Something in the water over
can
there.
Can we talk about your experience writing with Bieber? Like, what was that like? And that, did you know that that was going to be the big sort of single to transition him into like a real adult at that point?
Well, here's like kind of a serendipitous thing. Like, one, you know, I told you I met Scooter before, and I was in studio with my buddy, like my best friend now, Black Bear, and my friend MDL, who I didn't just do a lot of music with, and we walk in the studio and the day's starting. You know, we're at Atlantic Studio. It was Atlantic. Diane Warren bought the building now. And we worked there a lot. And it's this good little room, Studio C. I like it there because there's the other people always there. It's kind of competitive. So we walk in and I see my friend Matt Graham. And he goes in Studio A, which is like the bigger room. I walk in the room to go say what up to him. And I look to I trip on a skateboard, and it's Justin Bieber's. And I knew he knew he liked Bauchik while I had heard the Grave. So I was like, "What up?" And so we met. It was cool. So I went back in the room, and me and Black Bear, we had started the idea before at a video shoot. but it was called Inside of Your Bedroom. That's where we should go. I never liked that. I was like, that's not the right lyric, but it's a great melody.
Yeah.
So I just got slaved over all day, and then finally came up with, if I was your boyfriend, I'd never let you go. Keep you on my arm, girl. And, at the time, like, I was like, the MDL, he was doing the beat, and me and him did the beat together, and Blackbird played the guitar, and I was like, take everything out of the beat, just do the clapping, I have this sound, take everything out, just do that, that's it, and then we're just gonna make it hood. And at the time, like, Murray said that it was like before EDM blew up, this was after EDM blew up, everything was 124 on the floor, so it was like, if it didn't sound like Kesha TikTok, have that like, boom, 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 like it didn't get played. It was like when, baby, I like it, <Du-du-du-du-du-du-du>. You know, like that's what was on the radio. It literally was like a very homogenized top 40 period. Like right now.
Hold on. Radio gets homogenized?
What? Yeah, you're right. But honestly, like right now, it's much more open than it was in that time. I mean, you have songs like John Legend, All of Me, where it's just him and a piano. Like that never could happen that year. So we thought the same thing of that song. I was like, well, we didn't just kind of like Timbaland-y track. Like, this is just dope to us. Like, we never thought it'd be on the radio. And then a week later, I saw Scooter at a Clippers game. He goes, I hear Posner. I'm like, oh, what up? And he goes, or I said, you know, you should let me write for Bieber because I think I could nail it. So he's like, come to my house, play me stuff. So I play a bunch of songs. And the same guy was there, Matt Graham. He's like, you playing that song you did that day? So I play him, boy. And he goes, that's a single. That's the single. And it was just real serendipitous that we saw Bieber that day.
Crazy.
Before, you know?
Crazy.
And we didn't I was like, it was like months later where I'm hanging out with Black Bear in Atlanta, working with B Major.
Yeah.
And Major Alina. And we go, whoa. Wait, we saw Bieber right before we did that, and that became whoa, like tripped out for a minute, you know.
Does it faze you that the Maroon 5 song Sugar has
a billion YouTube plays?
Yeah, so many plays.
Doesn't faze me. I'm proud of that.
No, yeah, of course. It's awesome. But like, do you look at that and just like that's an unfathomable number?
A billion. I didn't know it had a billion.
Yeah, but I saw it today.
Yeah, that's really cool, you know. And when I was in high school, I wouldn't say exclusively listen to hip-hop, but I listen to mostly hip-hop. And it was hip-hop with other shit sprinkled in. And one of the things sprinkled in was songs about Jane. Because I heard that song, Harder to Breathe, by Maroon 5. And that beat was fucking hard.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, this shit is crazy, you know? And so, you know, to fast forward, I don't know, that's 10, 15 years, and to have a song with them and have it be a single, you know, it's fucking awesome, you know. And James, shout out to James Valentine, guitarist from Room 5. He played on my new album. He did a song called Hell of a Song. He also played on John Mayer's Continuum. A lot of people don't know that. That song, you know, so James Valentine, he's a master.
Man.
Yeah.
So, okay, new album is out. You're on this wave now that, like, it had to be, like, you know, wild and unexpected for you to reach, you know, this level of success with this album, right?
Listen, man. So, I'll take you through my last year. This was crazy, you know. I got diehard fans. Not like, Drake probably has, like, a couple million diehard fans. I probably have, like, 20 or 30,000 diehard fans.
Even at UNC.
Even at UNC. And I didn't know that at the time. Like, even a year or two ago. I thought, hey, man, I have these pop songs or hits. I haven't put shit out. I assume, like, my fans were, like, I had a couple here and there. And they were, like, I thought they were all, like, 13-year-old girls. That's really what I thought. And I read this book by Amanda Palmer called The Art of Asking. And in the book, she describes a thing she used to do called the Ninja Show. Where if her show sold out, she would tweet, hey, I'm going to play on the street corner at 5 p.m. before the regular show for the people that didn't get tickets. And I thought, wow, this is a beautiful idea. And so I did a ninja show in Ann Arbor in Michigan. and like 100 people came. Some, you know, we got like, I recognized someone from the beginning of my career. Someone got tats of my lyrics, you know. Some of their are, you know, and it's small for our meeting everybody. Some of their eyes are welling up when they meet me. This song really helped me through this thing. And I thought, oh, I love this, the Ninja Show thing. I love this. So I did another one in Nashville. I met Jeffrey there. Jeffrey tweeted me. He goes, do you need someone to film? I was like, yeah, sure, film it. He's like, hey, man, someone's filming it for free. Like, yeah, why not? Then he sends me this thing, the like piece that he made. It's amazing, right? So then I go home and I read On the Road by Jack Kerouac. Mm-hmm. And I thought, whoa, what if there was no other show that sold out? And what if we just did Ninja Shows and that was the tour? So we ran an RV. Me, my friend, my right-hand man, Super Matt, another musician, Adam Friedman, and Jeffrey. So I barely knew. I hung out with Jeffrey once. And I thought, fuck it, man. We're going to do it. You want to come?
Yo, said, Jeffrey could have been crazy.
He could have been fucking nuts. Yeah. He could have been crazy.
Like, ready to stab.
Knife's on deck. And, it would have been better.
By the way,
Cutlery
Jeffrey still could. By the way,
yeah, Jeffrey's right by the door right now. This is dangerous, guys. Yeah,
Jeffrey could be like doing the long con. You know?
So we rented a fucking RV, man. So we're never gonna get a hotel. And my manager was like, "All right, we got to get per diems for the crew." I'm like, "We're not doing per diem. We're just gonna ask for food." They're like, "Like jumping through all the tour hoops." I'm like, "This isn't. It's a ninja tour."
Yeah.
The fans do this. So we every day I would tweet, hey, I'm going to be in Phoenix tomorrow. Where should we play? Fans shoot back all the suggestions. I got an email list. I email the people in Arizona. They hit me back. I pick up a spot. I write to them, hey, we're going to do it at 5 o'clock. So we go to Arizona first, man. It was probably 150 kids came. You know, we stay after. We meet everyone. Sometimes it takes 2 hours. Sometimes it takes 4 hours. You know, this kid named Justin skateboarded 20 miles that day. Man, I just want to spit a 16 for you. Skateboard all this way. I had no ride.
His name was Justin?
Yeah, I forgot his last name.
Bieber.
No, one Bieber. You know, and like we met Raul that day, who's been coming to my shows for 6 years. You know, and people would give us like, they'd give us like $20 or they'd give us like cashews because they know I like cashews and they'd give us water. And then next day we played Grand Canyon. And like 10 people came.
You play the Grand Canyon.
We play in front of the Grand Canyon. And Jeffrey made a documentary about this that he's just about finished.
Yeah, where's
it
at?
He's been working on it for like a year.
Dope.
It's really amazing. He made a really great film.
So he's editing it, Jeffrey?
Yeah, it's his film.
Because he likes to cut.
Yeah, there
hey!
You go.
Yeah. He likes to carve. He's a carver. It was a perspective changing experience, you know, to where we, like, you know, we got to Seattle and, you know, met another kid. I forgot that boy's name, but you probably remember he's in the film, who said, you know, my mom has Huntington's disease and she has lost the ability to speak. I haven't spoken with her in 6 years. And your song Be As You Are, which is about my mom, he goes, you know, your song Be As You Are helps me remember her voice. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with something like that? It's like, for me, I'm like, I'm just writing the fucking songs because they pop in my head, you know? So I hug these people, and I don't know. I don't have any words that aren't cliche. When I was going to say thank you, like, stay strong, or whatever. Like, I just hug them until they are good. But I didn't know they were out there, you know? And, like, when you're an artist, there's a microphone in your face. Like, there's a microphone in my face right now. And, there's a tendency to want to fill up every silence with your words. And sometimes the most powerful thing you can do is shut up and listen. You know, and I had never shut up and listened before. You know?
Pirate.
I was so concerned with people liking me. I would do meet and greets before because I would want them to think I was nice and to tell their friends I was nice so hopefully more people would like me. Which is just totally selfish and bullshit. You know, I'm like, I'm pretending to be a nice guy for you to like me more. And this was like really about them, you know. And I just learned more what my job was, you know, which is to take on my own and other people's suffering and make something beautiful out of it.
Your job on this earth.
That's what an artist does, you know. And so I talk about this in film, I think, as well, and what rough cuts I've seen, is like the particulars, which are like how many people are enjoying my gift right now. You know, am I sharing my gift with 100 people? How? Why aren't 2,000 people hearing my gift today? It's like, don't worry about that. Those are the particulars. Just share the goddamn gift, man, that you've been blessed with. And so that's where I was last summer. And I moved out of LA, bought this van. I got so in love with the Ninja Tour, I bought a van. I thought, I want to live the Ninja Tour. So I bought a van, and I donate all my Jordans and whatever fit in the van. Like, that was my clothes, and I got rid of everything else. Donate everything else. And I drove away from LA. Because, you know, what's the old proverb? That which you possess possesses you. Mm-hmm. And so I drove to Utah. I was hanging out there. I had this gargantuan beard. I went to Burning Man. We did more another Ninja Tour.
And mushrooms.
I did a couple mushrooms here and there. That's really where I was. And then, you know, I'm in Utah with this big beard. And, like, my manager's like, hey, man, your song is number one in Norway. You know, I'm like, what the hell?
Well, how did it get to those guys?
My label, you know, they asked, can we get a remix done? And I love remixes, you know, because I you know, all my mixtapes, I'd remix other people's songs.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that Cooler Than Me was a remix. You know, original one is the one we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah.
You guys know I produce it with Big Sean. And then the one that blew up was a remix.
Correct.
And on my first album, I released all acapellas so kids could remix. I just love the ethos of the remix. You know, hip hop is based on sampling. So. Yeah. I think the less like copyright laws and the more reimagining, the better. That makes for better art and more art. So they asked me, I said, cool. And I didn't really like that. I'm still just like listening to Bob Dylan and Merle Haggard. And, you know, they sent me back this EDM thing. I'm like, yeah, it's cool, man. All good. And so the guys that made it were from Norway. I never met them at the time. And it just started blowing up there. I'm sure they had something to do with it blowing up there. Maybe they had some connections at Reyes, I don't know. And eventually it was like I wanted to work more with Black Bear, and he was in LA, so I drove back to LA. And my beard had like run its course where I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, this doesn't feel like how I feel on the inside anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I always wanted to dye my hair blonde, so I'd cut in one fell swoop, chopped the beard off, dyed my hair blonde. And yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, this song spread from Norway to Sweden to Amsterdam to eventually U.S. And, you know, I always thought the songs were good. Mm-hmm. By the time I had my album done for, like, a year or so, and I always thought they warranted, you know, a lot of people hearing them. So when people asked, did you think this was going to happen? It was like, yeah. Like, you know, when I started, like, my career with Mike Posner and the Brain Shop, I was like, I always, like, kind of believed that we were going to be big. I always thought, like, this stuff would find its way out. I operate under the assumption the tenet, is it tenet or tenet?
Tenet. Yeah.
You're like my vocab expert.
It's pirate.
Yeah, it's pirate, brother. I was already the tenet that if you make something really good, it will somehow get heard by a lot of people if it's really, really good. And I thought it made something really good. Did I think someone from Norway was going to do a remix and that was the no, I didn't fucking
you didn't
realize
know the particulars.
That was gonna happen.
Yeah.
You're right. And it was like, don't get caught. And I've learned that kind of the last years. Like, don't get caught in the particulars. Don't hold on too tight, you know, to the plan. They say, you want to make God laugh, make a plan. You know, so I'm just trying to enjoy the ride. I know that now, one, to be grateful for this up here. We kind of talked about this in the elevator on the way here. It's like, you know, when Cooler Than Me came out, I didn't know how fleeting and special, like, having a big song is. Because for me, like, you know, it's my first one this big in 6 years. My first album in 6 years, you know. And I hope that that's leading me to appreciate this whole thing more. The other thing I know now is that this is just a fucking game, you know. And it doesn't really matter, you know. You get so caught up. At least for me, like, I was over in London, Germany last week promoting the album. So, like, I'm not complaining, because that's what you do when we put an album out. The art is more important than the artist is. I think part of the job is telling people it's there.
Sure.
You know, that's why I do this interview. Is like, I hope some percentage of the people listening will really connect with my music. And it's not going to be a large percent. It's going to be like 1%. And, you know, some of them don't know it exists yet. So I'm here telling them about it.
Yeah.
You
know?
And, but when I do, like, you know, a week of, like, straight interviews all day, every day, it's easy to forget, like, that this shit really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like Mike Posner. Like,
well, you know what, though?
I'm the center of my own world a lot of times, and I can dangerously slip into a solipsistic view of the world. Solipsism is like a view that you're the only real person in the universe.
By the way, your pronunciation on that, beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. You know? That was a sound check for the NPR interview that I'm doing later this week. I tried that word out on y'all, and it was amazing. Passed with flying colors.
That was awesome. I think our big goal of this podcast, whoever we have on, Mano, Asher Roth, mm-hmm. You know, Lil Uzi Vert, like people who have been around, people who are brand new. If we can help them tell their story, and some people like them more as a person and their journey and want to support, that's what we love to do. We love to, like, shine a light on people
and their
full story. And I think that we came in here with high expectations for this interview. I think that I bumped it. Jeff said it.
Fell short.
And you spiked it. Yo, Mike Posner, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
And hopefully we can do this again.
I'd love to do it again.
Thanks everyone for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, if they want to find more episodes just like this, where can they go?
You can go on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also go to iTunes.
Yeah, you can search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. You can also go to our Snapchats. Eric, you are It's the Real Eric. I am It's the Real. We are very easy to find. We're fairly active on there.
Yeah, go on Google Play, go on SoundCloud, go on iTunes, leave a nice comment for us on there. Say what you think about this podcast, rate us highly, and please, in real life, go tell a friend about this podcast. Jeff, do you have a real life friend you want to tell?
I have so many real life friends I want to tell.
Oh, now you're just bragging.
Yeah, well, when you're this popular with this good of a haircut.
Oh, man. Who do you want to tell?
I want to tell my friend Jeremy Corellis, who listens every week.
Shout out to Jeremy.
Yeah, he lives in LA.
Okay.
He for a second almost lived in Atlanta.
Okay.
Almost lived in New York, but he's originally from Boston.
I mean, you can keep almost moving anywhere if you're Jeremy.
Yeah. Listen, Jeremy's out here almost moving
as
everywhere.
As long as Jeremy tells a friend in each of those cities, then I'm cool with that. I'd like to tell our friend Marcia St. Hubert, who listens occasionally. Hopefully she's going to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
She's the host of The Baby's Mother podcast. It's awesome. She recorded it from our apartment.
Yeah.
She's our real friend, and she should go tell everybody. She should get on her podcast. Tell all those mothers out there. By the way, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there.
If you're a mother, have a good Sunday. Everybody else, just shut the fuck up.
All right, we're going to do this again next week. We'll see you then.
I mean, I'll see you before the episode comes out, yeah.
All right, well,
great.
See you there.
Yeah, what a plan.
Bye.